headlines this hour. Israel rejects a call by nearly 200 nations to sign the nuclear non-proliferation treaty. Also ahead, aid ships with 10,000 tons of supplies sail to Gaza despite Israeli threats. An Afghan lawmaker says U.S.-led forces let the Taliban capture an eastern district. And more oil enters U.S. waters as BP and the government struggle to control the spill.
Hello, everyone. You're watching Press TV News live from Tehran.
Thanks a lot for joining us. Well, Israel has denounced a UN call for a nuclear-free Middle East as, quote, deeply flawed and hypocritical. A statement by the Israeli Prime Minister's administration says the call from nuclear non-proliferation treaty signatory nations ignores the real threats facing the region. The statement comes after 189 participating nations at the NPT review conference in New York called for Israel's accession to the treaty. They said Tel Aviv, as the only possessor of nuclear weapons in the Middle East, must put its facilities under IAEA safeguards.
It is so decided.
The declaration calls on Israel to sign the NPT and put its nuclear facilities under IAEA safeguards. This comes after the United States caved into international demands to pressure its ally Israel to join the Global Nuclear Non-Proliferation Accord. Some say the U.S. backed the statement over fears that the NPT might collapse. But Washington had a tough time disguising its anger about the declaration. It immediately lashed out at its singling out of Israel.
Because the final document singles out Israel in the Middle East section, a fact that the United States deeply regrets.
The U.S. repeated its allegations against Iran, a signatory to the NPT.
Iran is the only country in this hall that has been found by the IAEA Board of Governors to be currently in non-compliance with its nuclear safeguards obligations.
But some analysts slam the U.S. stance.
It makes no sense. All it does is undermine the credibility of the Obama administration with this double standard. But obviously, Israel must have the attention of the Middle East because it's the only nuclear power in the Middle East.
To no one's surprise, Israel, widely believed to have the only nuclear arsenal in the Middle East, was quick to condemn the statement. Tel Aviv, which refuses to join the NPT, denounced what it called the hypocrisy of a UN nuclear non-proliferation deal on the Middle East. Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and the EU's foreign policy chief Catherine Ashton welcomed the NPT statement. And Middle Eastern countries, including Iran and Egypt, also welcomed the declaration as a step towards nuclear disarmament. Iran, however, criticized the lack of political will to stop nuclear-armed states from developing their atomic arsenals.
It is really unfortunate that France and U.S., in an effort to keep the operational status of their nuclear arsenals unaffected, blocked any possible agreement to further limit or prohibit the use of the threat of use of nuclear weapons.
The four-decades-old NPT is intended to stop the spread of atomic weapons. But in a twist, it allows nuclear powers to keep their atomic arsenals while calling on them to negotiate on disarmament.
The former EU foreign policy chief advisor Alistair Crook has told Press TV there is considerable hypocrisy on the part of nuclear-armed states when it comes to the Israeli nukes issue.
I quite agree there is a great hypocrisy on the part of weapons-holding states, that where we have seen weaponization taking place outside of the NPT, in breach of the NPT, both in Pakistan, in India, and in Israel, in all of those cases, it has been responded by the West by further assistance, by further trade agreements, indeed technological help with their nuclear program. Here we have the President of the United States who has a policy of trying to bring about, if you like, a nuclear-free, nuclear weapons-free area, is giving assurances in advance to Israel that there can be no ending of the ambiguity on Israel's policy or change in American policy towards Israel until, if you like, in some far-fetched future, there is no conflict in the Middle East, there's no threats in the Middle East, and there are no weapons in the Middle East. So when they talk about a weapons-free world or a weapons-free Middle East, American officials, they're meaning basically Iran rather than Israel.
Now, Iran's parliament speaker has downplayed U.S. moves for a new round of sanctions against Iran. Ali Larijani says the West should not act selectively with regard to the Tehran declaration on a nuclear swap.
A red line is a selective approach to the declaration. They should take it as a whole. The U.S. Secretary of State has said there are imperfections in the declaration. We want them to clarify their point and state those problems clearly. These general statements are not helpful. If they really believe there are problems, they should discuss and negotiate them. I think there is confusion in Washington's foreign policy. They make contradictory remarks. The world does not need advice, but rather clear and specific comments.
At a press briefing in Tehran, Larijani advised the U.S. and its allies to come up with new ways in dealing with Iran's nuclear program. He noted that a new anti-Iran resolution would make the Tehran declaration ineffective. He warned that if new sanctions are adopted, the Iranian parliament, rather, will eye some other decisions.
Organizers of the Gaza-bound aid convoy are still trying to reach the impoverished coastal strip despite the Israeli threats. The convoy of several ships known as the Gaza Freedom Flotilla carries 10,000 tons of supplies for the Palestinians under the Israeli siege. The organizers say a decision on when the aid convoy will depart from Cyprus will be made later on Saturday. The delay comes as some of the 700 politicians and activists joining the flotilla are still trying to negotiate their way on board. Israel has sent in ships to prevent the flotilla from reaching Gaza. It has also threatened to jail or deport those accompanying the convoy. Hamas Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh says the flotilla is about to make history by breaking the Israeli blockade.
We hope the ships will arrive safely. If the ships reach Gaza, it's a victory for Gaza and a victory to all the people on board. If they're intercepted and terrorized by the Zionists, it will be a victory for Gaza too, because it will be a political worldwide scandal for Israel. And the people on board will move again in new ships to break the siege of Gaza.
Well, Press TV's Ashraf Shannon says the Israeli military has been trying to scare away Palestinians from receiving the flotilla along Gaza shores.
In the afternoon today, Israeli gunships fired at Palestinian boats and Palestinian fishermen who were preparing to receive the flotilla maybe sometime later this evening or tomorrow. The Palestinian Minister of Interior told me that none of the Palestinian fishermen or workers in the port area were hurt, but they say that it's sending a message to the people in the flotilla to stop, try and scare them from approaching Gaza's territorial waters. Late yesterday evening, Israeli gunboats headed from Haifa port and Ashdod port in Israel's territorial waters to try and circumvent the arrival of the flotilla.
At least six Palestinians have been killed in an explosion in a tunnel running under the border between the Gaza Strip and Egypt. Reports say that a faulty cooking gas cylinder caused the explosion. 17 others have been injured in the incident. Gaza residents bring in daily essentials through those tunnels. 1.5 million Palestinians have been living under a crippling Israeli siege in the Gaza Strip since 2007. The siege has caused a humanitarian crisis in the impoverished coastal enclave.
In other news, Taliban militants have hoisted up their flag in an Afghanistan district after days of heavy fighting with Afghan government forces. Reports say the U.S. military did not back up the Afghan forces during the battle, despite repeated requests from Afghan officials.
One more flag-draped coffin. The number of American soldiers killed in the Afghan war goes past the 1,000 mark, with the latest death. The costly battle continues to claim American lives in the remote, tough Afghan terrain and mountains. And this as the Taliban militants press ahead with their attacks against both Afghan civilians and policemen. In their latest operation, the Taliban took control of Barghimatal district in Nuristan province near the Pakistani border. The seizure followed several days of heavy clashes with Afghan security forces. The Afghan forces' defeat came after the U.S. backup failed to show up for the fight. The Taliban say they have dealt a heavy blow, killing 28 policemen and taking several others hostage. The police chief of the province says there were no signs of reinforcement during the whole battle, despite repeated requests.
Afghan officials have lost all connections with that area, and I have talked to the police chief of that area, who is now in the capital of Nuristan, General Qasim Paiman. He told me that the Taliban militants were heavily armed, therefore they could not resist. In this, Afghan general told me that they called on American forces stationed in Nuristan province for help so that they could recapture that area from the Taliban militants, but he said that they have received no response to their requests. The U.S. military, however, says that they have not been officially asked for help, and the U.S. commanders in Nuristan province are saying that they can't do anything unless they receive an order from their headquarters in Kabul. And as there is no help from the American forces side, the Afghan Interior Ministry is saying that they are sending more reinforcements to district of Nuristan province, so to help the Afghan forces who are stationed there to recapture that area.
An Afghan MP said the presence of U.S. troops in the country is pointless when they fail even to reinforce the Afghan army. The U.S. presence has been going on for 9 years. At least officially, the 2001 U.S.-led invasion of Afghanistan was to hunt down the Taliban and liberate Afghans.
This guy is a Taliban commander. He's in one of those buildings over there.
Neither aim, however, has been achieved. The Taliban are now making a comeback and even gaining the upper hand in key areas across the war-torn country. Massive amounts of U.S. tax dollars continue to be poured into an unpopular war in an insecure, volatile, and poverty-stricken country.
Now, the U.S. military has admitted to killing almost two dozen Afghan civilians in an airstrike earlier this year. It claims that it mistook them for Taliban militants. It's not the first time we're hearing it. The American military says a civilian caravan was mistaken for a group of militants. At least 23 people, including women and children, were killed in the attack. The reasons for the alleged mistake are cited as the ignoring of available information and a failure to analyze the situation. The incident happened in the southern Afghan province of Uruzgan back in February. The airstrike took place in the middle of a turbulent two-week period when U.S. and NATO attacks repeatedly and reportedly left more than 50 civilians dead. Four U.S. officers have been reprimanded so far, but it's unlikely that they'll be tried over the killing of the civilians.
You're watching the World News here on Press TV. A quick reminder of our top stories this hour. Israel rejects a call by nearly 200 nations to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Eight ships with 10,000 tons of supplies sail to Gaza despite Israeli threats. An Afghan lawmaker says U.S.-led forces let the Taliban capture an eastern district. More oil enters U.S. waters as BP and the government struggle to control the spill.